So I thought for our meditation this morning, we'd do a little spring cleaning. Spring cleaning of the soul. When we're all done doing that, you can come over to my house. Do a little spring cleaning there. So what I'd like you to do is just close your eyes if that's comfortable. Take a deep breath in. Feel the air coming into your body. And as you exhale, just relax. Feel the floor beneath your feet. The seat beneath and behind your body. Just letting go. And outside thoughts may enter your mind. That's normal. You may just imagine them as a cloud coming into your mind and just kind of escorting them out. And just for right now, you have no place else you need to be. Nothing else you need to be doing. Just focusing your attention on the sound of my words. And as you do, you may find yourself relaxing a little bit more. And a little bit more. Imagine that it's a beautiful spring day here in the Northwest. So much green. Green is the color of healing. So imagine now that you're outside. It's a beautiful, warm day, not too hot. We don't like it too hot here. Not too cold. We don't like it too cold here. It's a beautiful blue sky. Maybe an occasional puffy white cloud. Imagine that you're on a residential street now. It may be one you're familiar with or completely new to you. You may be able to smell the green lawn, maybe some flowers blooming. Notice the birds. And imagine now that you're standing on a parking strip. The green grass between the sidewalk and the street. Now, all of us have baggage. We have stuff that we carry around. And as we get a little older, we get a little more baggage. We seem to accumulate this baggage and we keep carrying it around. Maybe it's time to let some of it go. So imagine now that at your feet is all that excess baggage. Maybe in Gucci bags, maybe in brown, black plastic bags. You may know what's in them, or maybe you don't. Just take a moment now and get a sense of the baggage that you've been carrying around most of your life, that you're ready to let go of now. You're ready to do a little spring cleaning. You may be surprised by the number of bags you have. Maybe fewer than you expected, maybe more. And all of a sudden you notice a celestial vehicle approaching you. And you know it's coming to haul this baggage away. The baggage you are ready to let go of. Take a moment and notice this vehicle. Might be a truck, might be a spaceship, might be whatever it is. And this vehicle stops in front of you. And maybe someone gets out to help you. Maybe you know this being, maybe you don't. It's time to start loading up this vehicle. Notice how you feel as you begin to relieve yourself of some of this excess baggage. You may feel lighter. You may feel a twinge of sadness. You may feel joy. You may feel a combination of all these emotions and more. Everything you're feeling is absolutely normal. You finish loading up this celestial vehicle. And it begins to move away. And again, notice how you feel. And now look around your feet. Do you have any bags left? If so, that's okay. Everything else has been turned over. And in your mind, you turn these bags over as well. Everything's in God's hands, and all is well. Good morning. I have to set up the batter's box. Batter up. Those of us who love baseball long for those two words every year. One March 1982, as a matter of fact, my husband and I were celebrating our second wedding anniversary, and we decided to go to San Francisco for a long weekend. So we flew in, and as luck would have it, that was the same week that Queen Elizabeth was visiting San Francisco. And you could look out in the bay and see Britannia, her yacht. And it was there was a wonderful, wonderful, excited energy all throughout the city. And on Sunday morning, my husband and I got up and we went to DiMaggio's for breakfast. DiMaggio's is owned, I think, still by the DiMaggio brothers. The famous among them was Joe. Joe played for the New York Yankees. And he never went in the restaurant, but on this particular Sunday, Joe walked in. And I got to watch my husband turn 8 years old. He was so excited, and Joe was just lovely, gracious man. And they shook hands, and my husband introduced himself, and they chatted for a moment. And then Joe went and continued whatever he was doing, and we went and had breakfast. And my husband said to me, "Well, honey, you didn't get to meet the queen, but on the other hand, she never hit safely in 56 straight games." So I guess we got the better of the deal. Baseball is a metaphysical game. Baseball, they call baseball the nation's pastime. It's not the nation's sport. It's the nation's pastime. And I like to think of it as when I go to a baseball game, you don't have to watch the whole thing. You know, you talk, you have fun, you socialize. It's kind of like God. God's always there in the background, and when something exciting happens, you pay attention. Or when it's talking to you, you pay attention. Or when you need to pay attention, you pay attention. But God's always there. And just like baseball in the background. I love baseball movies. Who's seen Field of Dreams? Now that's a metaphysical movie, right? That's a lovely movie. Who's seen For Love of the Game? Not so many. Kevin Costner is a pitcher in that game, or in that movie. And it's lovely because it's juxtaposed. He's pitching a game, and at the same time, there's a relationship. You get the history of a relationship he's had with this woman. But one of the most beautiful parts about this movie is when he goes to pitch, he gives himself a little, we call it an anchor, a little signal. And the signal for him is the words, "Clear the mechanism." So you're watching this guy on the pitcher's mound getting ready to pitch, and you hear the words, "Clear the mechanism," and the whole world becomes silent. In the middle of all these people, thousands and thousands of people clapping and yelling and eating popcorn and doing all this stuff, it's silent. And so what I want to do today is help you find that silence at will. Find the focus at will. If you ever watch a batter, let me tell you another story before I do that. When I was between fifth and sixth grade, I fell in love with baseball. I knew it as baseball, it was softball. Fell in love with that game. And I remember calling friends of mine, all females, and let's go play some ball. Okay, so we'd meet up at the school and we'd play ball, play some softball, just a pickup game. The first or second time we did this during summer vacation, I looked up and there was a woman walking toward us. I still remember her name. It was Doris Burden. And I thought, why is this? What's going on here? And she came up to us and said, "Would you guys like to play in a league?" Okay. Didn't know what that meant, but it meant we got to play other teams and we got to get together and we got to really, really play. The first year we were in existence, we came in second in that league. And we were just having fun. And the reason I tell you that story is somebody said to me the other day these exquisite words, "Intention creates synchronicity." We just intended to go play some ball. And this woman showed up. After the first year, I never saw her again, never heard from her again. Not sure she existed. It was so much fun. Next time you watch a baseball game, and we love the Aqua Sox here, that's like real oldie baseball, right? You can smell the grass. Next time you watch a baseball game, I want you to, first of all, watch the batter. They will go through a ritual because the brain loves repetition. So they'll go through a ritual. They tap, 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 tap. Now, they don't wear cleats anymore. There used to be a reason they would tap the dirt out of their cleats, but they don't do that anymore, but they still tap, tap. And they do this, and they do this, and they do this, and they do this, and they... I'm not scratching. Do I look like Roseanne? And all of this is to set their intention. And I want you to look at the focus that they have on that next pitch. If we could focus on God that way. Sister. And then, one of two things is going to happen. A strike or a ball. And one of two things is going to happen. They're going to hit it or not. Now, the beauty is, after they get all ready, and they've already done their homework. They've studied the pitcher. They know what's, they, you know, if this guy's likely to throw a fastball first pitch or whatever. They've studied it. Now, let's say the pitcher throws a strike, and he doesn't swing. He's got a strike called on him. Do you think he quits? Do you think he goes, oh, I can't do this. I'm leaving. No. It was just a strike. Guess what? With the next pitch, he gets to start over. With baseball, every spring, we get to start over. Every spring, we're going to the World Series. Let me rephrase that. Every spring, we're going to win the World Series. We don't want to affirm going to the playoffs or going to the World Series. We want to affirm winning. So where are your affirmations falling short? And where do you, after one pitch, quit? Or after one inning, quit. Or after one season. What you do, if you strike out, you go sit in the dugout and you say, what can I do right? I was listening to Bill Walton. Remember Bill Walton, the basketball player from Portland? He's doing the Husky basketball commentary. And he said, the guy who forgets his last mistake first wins. In golf, they say the most irrelevant shot is the one you just hit. Because you're done. If you stay back there, you can't be here, and you certainly can't move forward. The guy who forgets his last mistake first wins. Guy, woman, you know what I mean, the generic. So, next time you're up to bat, you get all ready. You know, we do this in meditation. You got a meditation room. I have a rug that I got of Athena that I got in Greece, goddess of wisdom, because I figure that's always a good thing to have. And I have my little candle, and I have my little fountain, and I have my little chair, and everything gets me ready to go hang out with God. I know I always hang out with God, but there's certain times I hang out with God where I do my best to clear the mechanism. So nothing else is talking, yammering, beating me up while I'm hanging out with Spirit. Now, I also want you to watch the pitcher go through his routine, or hers. We love the slow or the fast pitch women. Anybody watch that, the playoffs? Fast pitch, yeah, pretty cool. These women are amazing. Kind of like women soccer players, but that's another story. So the pitcher, now again, done all the homework, and his whole aura is, I'm going to win. Now, if we could bring that energy into our practice and into our lives, we'd be unstoppable. I'm going to win. I've done my homework. I know this guy likes to hit a high fastball And he always strikes out on a high fastball. So I'm going to throw him a high fastball. Now, a pitcher, this is really a game of inches. They call baseball or football a game of inches. Baseball is really a game of inches because little here, little there is a home run or a strikeout, the difference. So the pitcher clears the mechanism, gets ready to meet the challenge before him or her. You've done your homework, and now it's, in golf we have a saying, train it and trust it. And it's the same with life. Do your homework, and then trust that that God will take care of the rest. I consider myself a co-creator of my world with Spirit. Spirit gives me the ideas, I get to do them. That's how we co-create together. So, watch the intensity, watch the focus of the pitcher meeting the challenge in front of him or her. If we could focus like that on God, how amazing would our lives be? Well, our lives are pretty amazing anyway. You have created everything in your world. If you don't like it, create something else. Babe Ruth, legendary player for the Yankees and the Red Sox. Oops, that was another story. You know the story about he visited a young man in the hospital who had terminal cancer. And he told him he was going to hit a home run for him that day. And he got up to the plate at one point. I think it was his last at bat. And he'd had several strikeouts. You know that story. And then he pointed to the outfield. What nerve. And then he set the intention. He set the affirmation. There was nothing to do but do it. And he hit that home run for that kid in the hospital. I used to love Muhammad Ali because as braggadocious as he was, he did what he said he was going to do. He set the intention. He set the affirmation. He set the expectation. And then he did it. So where do we need to step out a little bit more? This is what I'm going to do. We set a commitment. We set the intention. Let God produce the synchronicity. Focus. America's pastime. So please get out this year, this season, because you know it's preseason. I think we're going to win the World Series. In 1995, the Mariners won a record-setting 116 baseball games. Out of 2 million, I think. Isn't that how many they play every year? 186, which is pretty amazing. Their mantra that year, anybody remember it? Refuse to lose. Is that great? Refuse. I'm not going to do it. How about that for a denial? And they got the whole city on board. And everybody, that energy, there was so much momentum and so much energy, they caused a stadium to be built with Refuse to Lose. In 2001, they had another record-breaking season. You remember what this motto for that one was? Two outs, so what? I remember sitting at Safeco Field with a friend of mine. Think, has it occurred to you that most of our runs are scored when there's two outs? And then everybody seemed to kind of pick up on that energy. I'm sure I started it. And it was like, two outs, so what? Is that a great way to be in the world? Two outs, so what? I'm going to hit a home run right over there. So based on those two years, 2001 and 1995, I have some rules that I've learned from those two baseball years, those teams. First of all, and these rules I figure can help all of us, banish all doubt. Banish all doubt. Refuse to lose. It's not an option. The first time I read the Gospels, I was kind of surprised at how what I termed the arrogance of Jesus. I thought he was so arrogant, but he was absolutely convinced that he was right. I mean, there was no option. He banished all doubt. I am the way. You don't change money in my Father's house. All these, you know, this is the way it is. Be willing to do whatever it takes to succeed. There's a great book called The Ultimate Secret to Getting Absolutely Anything You Want. And the secret is, be willing to do whatever it takes. Now, the key is, you may not have to do it, but you need to be willing to do it. And if you're not willing to do it, God knows. It's not, oh, I'm willing to move to Atlanta. You can't go like that to God. You wink, wink, yep. Surround yourself with people who believe in you. Baseball players hit slumps. You ever hit a slump in life? Where you're not quite in the flow? You know what happens when you hit a slump in baseball? You go back to the basics. So when we hit a slump in life, we go back to the basics. We do our meditation practice. We surround ourselves with people who love us. We gather our spiritual family together. We read our inspirational books. We go back to the basics. Everybody hits slumps. What else happens to a team when you hit a slump is they pick up for you. They take over for you. They carry you when you can't carry yourself or carry them. So you surround yourself with people who believe in you. Get rid of the naysayers. You don't get rid of naysayers when what happens is as you move forward with your spiritual practice and your positivity and your joy in life, they leave. Because they don't want to be around you either. Oh, you're no fun anymore. We can't gossip and talk bad about everybody and do the ain't it awfuls. You're no fun. So they just kind of fall away. You don't have to get rid of anybody. It's just God's way of working for us. So you build a team that shares your vision. Enthusiasm. People always say winning teams are having fun, first and foremost. Baseball, football, college, pro. Doesn't matter. First, and you'll talk to them. They say, we're just out here having fun. I don't know. When you're having fun, you win. You don't focus on the winning, you focus on the having fun. So have some enthusiasm and do some fun stuff. Somebody said one time, I think I may have shared this with you, she didn't want to turn her life over to God because she was a musician and she was afraid God wanted her to be like a bookkeeper. And I said, do you want to be a bookkeeper? No. Would you be any good at being a bookkeeper? No. Then why in the world do you think God wants you to do something like that? I don't think it works that way. I'm not sure, but I put money on no. Do what you love. People, I remember when Bill Gates was starting Microsoft. That's how old I am. And they would work night and day. He and his little band of, you know, Paul Allen. And the guy that bought the Clippers. What's his name? Steve Ballmer. They would work night and day. Now, if they were getting an hourly wage, they'd be making 10 cents an hour. But they were working for a dream. The dream was to have their software, their operating system in every computer on the planet, when there weren't that many, but they were going to have a computer in every kid's person's hands. Lofty goals. But that was their dream. That was their passion. So find what you're passionate about. Follow your passion. Understand that everything can change like that. There it is. Everything can change in an instant. Somebody said, believe that your life will change with a phone call, for indeed that's typically how it does happen. Things can change immediately. Marianne Williamson says, there's no shortage of miracles. Miracles is a shift in perception. So, change the way you think about something. Expectation creates synchronicity. Do what you love. That's the old saying, do what you love, the money will follow. The attitude of gratitude opens up everything. The way I figure it, it's like when I'm thankful, God kind of goes, oh, you like that? Here's more. Okay, you like that? Remember the scene in Brother Sun, Sister Moon, Franco Zeffirelli's rendition of St. Francis, where the monks, he gathered a little gathering of monks, and they went begging in the village, door to door, with their bowls, bare feet in the snow, chanting, thank you, God, for our poverty. Oh, you mean everything. Thank you, God, for everything. Because God doesn't judge. He leaves that up to us. And we do a darn fine job of it, don't we? Wake up in the morning with the attitude of gratitude, and your life will change like that. And it doesn't have to change radically. It can just be change happy. You get a little happier. You get a little more content. You get a little more peaceful. Does this sound doable? Sound like fun? All that from baseball. Rumi, who is a Sufi mystic and poet, says, out beyond right doing and wrongdoing, there's a field. I'll meet you there. And for some of us, we really, really hope it's a baseball field. I want to thank you. Now we have a special, I hope, event. I gave Take Me Out to the Ball Game, kind of a little metaphysical spin here. So in your brochure, in your program today, there's new words to take me out to the ball game. So I would love it if you would join me in a new version of Take Me Out to the Ball Game. We're going to sing it twice. Stand up, please. Does everybody have paper or next to somebody who has paper? And we're going to sing it loud and with energy, just like they do 50,000 at the stadium. Take me out to God's ball game. Take me away from the crowd. Lead me to where the air is clean. Let me lie down on the grass so green. Let me root, root, root for God's love in all. If you can't feel, it's a shame. For it's one, two, three strikes, you're safe at God's great ball game. One more time. Take me out to God's ball game. Take me out. away from the crowd. Lead me to where the air is clean. Let me lie down on the grass so green. Let me root, root, root for God's love in all. If you can't feel, it's a shame. For it's one, two, three strikes, you're safe at God's own ball game.
For it's one,
two, three strikes, you're safe at God's own great ball game. Yay! Woohoo! Good job! Thank you.